Hey.
This is Deanna Spingola. It is Friday, June 29th, 2012, and this is one of my special interviews. We have no commercials, no censorship, no calls, and no music. It is just education and information. It is bare bones broadcasting. My guest today is Bob in D.C. His website is resist.com, and this is the site that you can download all of those wonderful Liberty Bell magazines in PDF format. So, Bob, welcome to the program.
Well, glad to be here, Deanna. I'm glad you're here. It looks like a pretty hot day here in D.C. In fact, they expect it to go up to about 105 or so, and that's with humidity. So it'll feel like about 115. So interesting. That's why I'm staying indoors today. So.
Yes, me too.
Yep. So one thing I'd like to talk about is the Liberty Bells themselves and some anomalies about them. Now, because I'm not tearing the books apart, there is some skewing and things like that. But for the most part, every one of them is word addressable, which means you can copy articles and you've got to be sure to do a spell check, and you should go over a grammar check too. But for the most part, you'll get good articles if you want to download an entire article. Another anomaly is that Mr. Dietz, George P. Dietz, when he put these together, occasionally would bring articles from other publications, and the foliation, he would maintain the old foliation. So you might see a page go from page 14 to 47 to 67, and then to like page 38 or whatever. It's kind of odd. So folks should be aware of that. And there is one issue out there, and people will say, well, this is the wrong month. And it's in October, I think, 92. I'm not sure of the year, but it's an October date, and the year is wrong. So they'll look at that. But what you want to do is check out the running footers. Usually magazines have running heads, but since this is a smaller booklet, they have running footers. And the correct date and month will be down there. If you ever see something like that, check that out. And just a final word again to reiterate, some of these publications were a little bit water damaged, not really water, but moisture damaged, so they were wavy. And you will see that in some of these, not all of them, I'd say maybe 10%. But they still are word addressable for the most part if you want to download an article. Deanna, very interesting. You had Paul Friedrich Berg on last week.
Yes, on Friday.
And you've had him on more than a few times.
Right.
And every time as I'm scanning these things is kind of interesting.
Yes, he's written for Liberty Bell.
Yeah, and scanning, just the technique of scanning them, it's sort of maybe a step or two above basket weaving. And the beautiful thing is, while you're doing it, now I'm listening to radio shows and things which I couldn't do before because I was actually producing some. And it's just a lot of fun because when you're doing something mundane like this, your mind is free. It's a funny thing. You kind of think of the factory worker in Detroit and stuff like that from the old days and those horrible repetitive jobs. But on the other hand, those people had a lot of time to do some creative thinking on the side.
I'm sure.
So it's just interesting. I find it interesting that now I'm listening to some of these shows. I was just listening to Mike Rivera. And he's very interesting. He does some good thinking. I know he's partially Jewish, and I know sometimes he backs off a little bit because of that, but not much. He's pretty hard hitting, even though. And so he's got an interesting show. And this morning, by the way, I hate to go off on a tangent here, but this morning, Charles Giuliani on Truth Hurts had a very interesting guest on, and this guy is a left winger. But the name of his book is Corporate Feudalism, and he nailed it. And I would suggest people might want to go over to Oracle Broadcasting and check out today's show over there. It was pretty good.
Yeah, I've been on Charlie's program before. I like what he does.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah.
So just to finish up with the Liberty Bells, the gutters sometimes will give you a problem, and only very rarely will the dark go into the type. And so things like that. So they're not perfect. And, I think they're more than good enough for folks to read is no problem. Reading is no problem. But for the most part, I'd say 95% of the time, and maybe even more, people can actually grab these, Word grab these, copy and paste these articles into an editor and put them together and put them up on their websites and things like that. And, oh, by the way, more J.B. Campbell, I was surprised. He must have 20 or 25 articles so far that I've seen.
Good for him.
Yeah, and a bunch more. You know, it's just a heck of a publication, and I think folks will have a good time. Oh, one additional thing, final thing I'll talk about on the Liberty Bells is download them. Download them, download them. And there's a program called Download Them All, which folks can take a look at. And I would suggest, to do a really good job, there should be triple downloading. And you don't really have to do that, but folks that are really serious, and not just this, but for other things, folks that are really serious should get themselves a hard drive, about a half a terabyte, 500 gigabytes, something like that. And they're around 60, 70 bucks now. And also maybe some thumb drives. And also then make sure you copy onto DVD data disks, things like that. Do it at least double backup, if not triple. And do other things. The installations, we have most of the installations, we'll have all but 11 months as soon as those are all posted. And that's 25 years. And some of those were ripped off from, or I shouldn't say that, but ripped from Jamie Kelso's site. But I don't feel bad about that at all. I give him credit. And we should keep these things in as many places as possible, because they are attacking some websites now. Mike Delaney's site, and he's connected with like four or five different sites. They were hit by GoDaddy, and GoDaddy just gave them 48 hours to get out. And so they have since gone back up, and I don't know what server they're using, but that's what I mean. Replicating this stuff shouldn't be a problem. I don't even ask permission. Of course, we fly the black flags on resist.com. So, yeah.
Sure. All righty. I know Zayat Crime Factory is still not up. Let me just look here. Nope, still not up.
Well, Delaney's got a backup WordPress, an old, I think it's a WordPress that he uses, but I don't know if he's back up yet.
Yeah.
But they'll be back up before the weekend, I'm sure.
Yeah.
That's a real problem, giving you 48 hours, because these guys had how many gigabytes of data up that they had to transfer, and that's not easy to do.
No, it isn't.
It's a long process, so that was kind of rotten by them not giving him a week, giving him 48 hours. But that's typical. I hope you don't mind me saying this one time. I use this pejorative term for the Jewish elites. I call them kike Jews. And that is typical for their methodology. They'll do anything they can to throw roadblocks. But I'll use that one time, but this is your show, and I'll just use it once.
Well, it's very interesting, the things that that Zion Crime Factory was talking about right before the GoDaddy notified Michael Delaney. And he was talking about Webster Tarpley, and he was talking about some of the disinfo agents who were saying, who always use the Nazis did this, the Nazis did that, and the Nazis are taking over the U.S. government, and they're running things. And so... Zion Crime Factory really hit these people, and within 24 hours, the GoDaddy notified Michael Delaney that the sites needed to come down, and of course, Zion Crime Factory is under that umbrella.
Yeah, the Nazi stuff always is a turnoff, because as we know, it's not the Nazis. What it really is in the upper Jewish echelon, it's the division between the left-wing communist types, and it's hard to categorize them in a single box, but they're all over there on the left doing the gay stuff, doing the porn stuff, doing the commie stuff. They're doing everything on the left, and they tend to be anti-Zionist. They tend to be, but not necessarily anti-Israel, but they tend to be anti-Zionist. And then you've got the right-wingers who are crazy, 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 really crazy Likudnik types, which, I mean, if they really push Russia, even though Russia really kowtows some to the Jews, they'll just they'll just have to take them on. But so you've got those two factions. Those are the two basic factions in the West, and increasingly in the East now. Those are the two basic factions. So this Nazi stuff, it's just a cover. It's just a cover. And I know Webster Tarpley. I'm an old LaRouche guy from 35 years ago. And Webster Tarpley used to do the old Saturday show for LaRouche. It was one of these cable access deals, and it was a video type. And so he was a LaRouche, and I think he still is a LaRouche type, and kind of interesting. And some people say he might be a Jew. I don't know. But one thing for sure. He's one of these guys that uses the Nazi, and the LaRouche people, because there are so many secondary and tertiary Jewish leaders there that they have to play that game too. But it's just not the truth. It's not the whole truth, and it's a cover. So we know that, and you know, I think it's getting out too. By the way, there was a good North Korean documentary, part six. I think they've only got six of the 10 parts posted, uploaded.
Yeah, I watched that this morning. You sent it to me and I watched it.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah.
Now, that one was pretty good, but if you look at the early ones, again, Nazi. So.
Right. Well, they did bring up the Holocaust and promoted that a bit. And yeah. But other than that, it looked pretty good. They also said that Versailles, where the treaty was signed, was a Rothschild mansion, which I never heard that said before.
Yeah, that was, I only listened to the whole thing, I think, like 1.5 times, because I was actually downloading all of them, making sure that we got them. And, but yeah, I did catch that. And it's interesting that they brought that out. They didn't mention Balfour, I don't think. And they didn't mention Sykes-Picot either, but that was it. And anybody that goes into any other direction than that is either unknowledgeable or is a gatekeeper of some type. So,
right.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. What else have we got here? Was there something else that you wanted me to talk about? I did have something else, but.
No, go ahead and just talk about whatever you'd like.
Okay. The other day, one of our people, she goes by Doom Goddess, she brought up a quote by someone and didn't quite know the correct pronunciation of his name, but his name was Buenaventura Durruti. And I don't know if you've ever heard of him. Probably not.
No, I never have.
Okay. One comment that was made about him is that somebody said, well, the two greatest Reds, in fact, I've got it here someplace, but let me just paraphrase it. The two greatest Reds or revolutionaries of the 20th century were Lenin, Trotsky. Now, wait a minute, though. We have to include this third guy, Buenaventura Durruti. Now, who the heck is this? So I looked into it, and since she brought it up, for the quote that she had found. So I did some investigation, and I went and looked up into it, and he was one of the heads, if not the head, of the Republican faction in Spain during the Spanish Civil War in the 1930s. And very interesting, some of the stuff he says, outside of one or two comments, which make all the difference in the world, but a lot of what he said from a working class standpoint makes a good sense, because as Tom Metzger often says, people often forget the class aspect. It isn't just race. And Tom says often it is also class. And that's one thing that the right wing has a real problem with, is the class side of things. And too often the right wing, even working class right wingers, they'll hook on to these upper echelon elites who are actually like the old sort of physiocratic plantation owners, who were slave owners, who would actually bring in slaves into the South as scab labor against the working class whites. And too often these right wingers associate themselves with these elitists who, more than anything else, are about as close to being Jews, upper level elite Jews, as you could come by. In fact, those Southern planters often had even familial ties with the Jewish bankers in New York. And
absolutely. Yeah. Yes, that's where they got their money to do their planting.
Mm.
And, of course, slavery was bad in the North and in the South, too, because it affected the middle-class whites. And, of course, when they had the slaves up North, when they were building all of those ships and everything in the more industrialized North, they used slaves. And then the white laborers, they weren't getting any of the jobs.
Right. Or they like the Irish would come in and work the holds in the steamships
right.
on the Mississippi because they didn't want to waste their slaves down there. They'd rather pay these guys. They die off. They keep their slaves alive, and et cetera.
Right.
So folks have to really come to grips with that. And I think we have to. I really don't consider myself left or right. I am an advocate for the white working class, whatever that means, and that can mean a lot of different things. But I think too many white leaders, they make a lot of mistakes. One thing they do is they don't train their guys not to be put targets on themselves, like tattoos and things like that. That's really stupid these days, tattoos, because it's an identifier that you can never get away from. And a lot of folks want to go into the army, like skinhead types and other types, want to go to the army and maybe learn what they need to know, let's say. But they go in with maybe a chip on their shoulder, but if not that, they have racial tattoos on. Well, if they have those tattoos on and they go into the army, they photograph everybody that goes in for these tattoos, identifying tattoos. So it's just one aspect. People have to be a lot more surreptitious. I mean, we are behind enemy lines. That's all there is to it. And we have to almost consider ourselves spies, so to speak, but not really, but keep very low-key, like these marches and things like that. What do they get done? You know, what we need to do is get the information out. Get the information out and keep pumping the information out and just keep the heat going, because it's like Daryl Bradford Smith said on his site a while back, is in fact, he said it a few times over the last 2 or 3 years, that 7 or 8 years ago when he started, he put the word Zionist into the Google, and he'd get like 1,200 hits, 1,500 hits. Now, if you put it in, you get 16 million hits.
Oh, my word.
So, it's just keep getting the information out. And I think our best, rational approach now from a tactical and even a strategic point of view is to keep the pressure up. Don't go off the handle. I really can't see these organizations. We are against organizations because every one of them is infiltrated, and anyone of any significance. But to keep the informational pressure up and be low key, and if you want to set up a geographical location, well, okay, and make sure the folks that you want to invite up there, but don't broadcast it, and just do it. Just start. Another family over 10 years, you have 30 or 40 families in a certain geographical location, then you can start up your precinct voting and things like that. I mean, it's a slow process, but we have to do the slow along with the fast. And I think the big thing, though, is getting this information out. I think these Jews are going absolutely nuts. They're paranoid beyond belief, and they should be, because they're all, at least the upper reaches, the elites, the decision makers, these people are all guilty of fraud, crimes against humanity, and crimes against really every other race. And so I think we just have to keep the pressure up on them. But to get back to Buenaventura Durruti, he had some quotes, and I want to see if I can bring these up. I had this up yesterday. Yeah, here it is. Now, this is interesting. This is very interesting. Now, this is during the Spanish Civil War, and he's on one side and Franco's on the other. Now, in that war, the Republicans, which were the Reds, or at least the workers, and I have to call them the Reds because of something I'm going to bring up in a bit, but they were supposedly the legal government, and Franco was the revolutionary, the insurgent. And I don't know if many people know that, but that's the truth. So here's this one quote, kind of interesting. There are only two roads, victory for the working class, freedom, or victory for the fascist, which means tyranny. Both combatants know what's in store for the loser. We are ready to end fascism once and for all, even in spite of the Republican government. No government fights fascism to destroy it. When the bourgeoisie sees that power is slipping out of its hands, it brings up fascism to hold onto their privileges. So what he's saying right there is not only is he, they're not really part of the Republican government either, but they're defending it. And the Republican government is actually being pressured or attacked by the Falangist, which is Franco. But when they talk fascism, back then it had a different meaning, and going way back in history, it has a lot different meaning, and they didn't quite understand the full meaning of it. But it's the nomenclature of the day. It's the you have to put it in context. So he sees the right wing as being fascist, and the right wing always sees the left wing as being communist. You know, that's just the way it is. But there's a lot of gray area.
Right.
And so my whole underlying point here is that you got to remember what happened early on in National Socialist Germany. It wasn't all that successful until Hitler actually turned Joseph Goebbels. And Joseph Goebbels was close to being a communist. I mean, he was a definite socialist, but he was close to being a communist. And when he was given Berlin, he went up there, and, you know, he was turned, and he went up there, and he used a lot of the talking points of the communists, and he just turned them right against them, and he got the working class involved. And I'm just guessing this. I don't have actual facts on this. Maybe somebody like Veronica Clark or somebody can find the a great researcher like that could find the details. But I got a sneaking suspicion. Most of the Browns, or not most, but a high percentage of the brown shirts were turned communists. And I'm not talking the leadership. The communist leadership probably was pretty much dyed in the wool. But the lower ranks, pretty much a lot of those ended up in the brown shirts. And what Goebbels did up in Berlin, especially in that area, is he created the kind of a propaganda jiu-jitsu. And that's what really strengthened the National Socialists going into the early 30s. So it's really a lot of gray area. But I like some of what this guy says, and this guy Derruti. And farther down, though, there's a big problem. But let me give you one more quote here, which is very interesting, because I've heard right-wingers say exactly the same thing. Here it is. We have always lived in shanty towns, and if we destroy, we are also capable of building. It was us who built the palaces and the cities. The workers can build them again, and better ones. We are not afraid of ruins. We have a new world here in our hearts. Kind of an inspiring speaker there. And he's not only a military leader, but he was, I guess, pretty high up. And I don't know a lot about this guy. I've only caught on to this in the last few days, but very interesting. Now, let me tell you where they go wrong. I think, let's see, maybe give a few more quotes here. Yeah, let me just give these quotes, and I'm not even sure where they're going to go. But this is almost totally extemporaneous. Here we go. This war we wage is to squash the enemy in front of us. But the enemy is also he who opposes the revolution's conquest. Well, let's continue on. We make war and revolution at the same time. The militiaman has to know that he fights for the conquest of the land, the factories, culture. The pick and the shovel are as valuable as the gun. Yeah, interesting stuff from this commie, huh?
Yes.
Now, you know where they go wrong, and I can't find it on this one. It might be in the next one. I've got two pages up here on my – oh, yeah. And sometimes these pages aren't organized real well. But where they go wrong is where they go for 100% worker domination. One of their aspects, and one of their this is what the Jew uses to manipulate. He always goes for, you know, either all black or all white. There's no gray area. And so where they go wrong, one of the aspects of their particular doctrine, their particular extrapolation of, quote, communist rules and procedures, end quote, pursued, is that they say it's got to be complete 100% worker domination, which we know is impossible. The Jew is always up there running things, but that's where they go wrong, and that's the real bottom line of communism, is it's all black, it's all or white or red, it's all worker. There is no combination, and that's where true fascism, when it works well, and in fact, it can only be what it should be, which is a combination of the private and the working private sector, the boss or the management private sector, even including some financial, and as small as possible, but the government coordinating things. So it's those three elements, those three legs in the tool of true fascism. And the real problem, though, with fascism and what these folks probably prey upon is the fact that it often ends up with too much power in too few hands, and without enough counter force to avoid real big mistakes. So, but I find this guy very interesting. I'm just wondering what you think.
Well, getting back to this this unifying all the people in Germany. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of communists in Germany, during World War I, following World War I, because the communists really did infiltrate a lot of communities, took over a lot of government buildings, and they got a lot of people to go along with them, particularly during World War I. They convinced a lot of the military men, Navy men, to basically stop fighting and using the anti-war kind of thing. And, of course, there was a food situation during World War I where the military was not getting enough to eat. And so it was very easy for the communists to persuade them to just lay down their arms and stop fighting. And you have to ask yourself, well, what happened to those men after World War I? What was their political viewpoints then? And were those the same kinds of people that were attracted to National Socialism? And I believe that Hitler, with his rhetorical skills, had the power to unify everyone. And that is what he did. He was the great unifier. And he would get the people that belonged to the labor unions. He would get everybody, men, women, everybody, and he would give them, where we have so much diversity in this country, where you have, the blacks against the whites, and that's
Oh, absolutely, yeah, that's a divide and conquer all the way.
Yes, that's what I was trying to think of. Mm-hmm. Deliberate, and in Germany, Hitler saw that could happen. And instead of allowing that to happen, because there was a lot of division when he took over in 1933, and yet he built unity. And you have to wonder that certain of those that had followed the communist line before, and of course they did get rid of a lot of the communist leaders, and then he unified them under something that they could all believe in.
Yeah, and I was bringing up Goebbels before, because Goebbels had a big part in that, actually showing the workers and the farmers too. I mean, the Strasser brothers early on, particularly Gregor Strasser and even Otto Strasser, early on got a lot of the farmers involved, a lot of the agricultural folks involved, and then Goebbels up in the populous northern regions, got a lot of the good people away from the communists. Actually, the communists are nothing but a small, very small vanguard grouping, and that's why they're communists, and most of them are Jews and Jew thinkers. We call the others, like the lapdogs, Jew thinkers. They may not be Jewish in any kind of genetic means, or we're just talking Levites and Cohens for the true genetics, but in any kind of close familial means, but they do think like Jews, or they allow themselves to be bought off, so they're Jew thinkers. But that's a small clique. Usually the communists are mostly bluster and divide and conquer, and they use the typical Jew tools, and you know, that's what it is. So if you can get to the lower ranks or the smarter ranks and explain to them what's going on, you can turn them on a dime, you know, because but a lot of the things that the communists would say are good stuff, you know, it makes a lot of sense.
Well,
But
yeah, and it appeals to people who are poor. It appeals to people who want justice and who want equality. And it's, you know, those are the same kinds of things that they always offer. But the top leaders, the communist mentality or dogma, certainly does not, you know, they promise things that they will never deliver.
Yeah, and well, it's like in Russia, what they did is peace, land, bread. That was their big deal.
Sure.
That was it. You know, and that's pretty simple. And then behind the scenes, they're killing, they're doing this, that, and the other thing to take over. I mean, that's what communism is. It's basically Judaism, and ultimately. But the worker types, like this Daruti guy, he was an honest guy. I think he was a railroad worker, and a mechanic. And these are true working class people who had to fight. I mean, they actually were the right at that time were really domineering capitalist types who, in the end result, are very often in bed with the Jews, with the Jewish financiers. And it's very similar to the situation in the South, in antebellum America. It's very similar to that internecine collection between the southern planters and the northern Jewish bankers, and sometimes they even intermarried. And by the way, there were a lot of Jews down in Charleston, South Carolina, too. I think it's South Carolina.
Yeah, because that's
Awful
where
lot.
Freemasonry started early on.
Yep, the latest versions of it. Yeah, with Albert Pike. Yep.
Yeah.
And so I just want to, the thing I want folks to break through on a little bit is try and two things. Try and be a little bit, I mean, these marches don't make any sense. You know, going to a synagogue and marching, putting leaflets under a synagogue door or something like that's stupid. I mean, why let the enemy know what your plans are? And if nothing else, and also look at all these left-wing kids who they've cajoled. But a lot of these kids are not stupid. They will turn around on the race issue someday, but for now, they understand that how evil these transnational corporations are. They see
Right.
that.
Yes. If you talk to the people that are in the Occupy movements, they're basically talking about the corporations and about and they see all the outsourcing. They also see the insourcing where corporations are actually bringing people in to take jobs. And when we call a company and we hear a foreign voice, we used to think, oh, we're talking to somebody in India. No, these people are here in this country. They have been brought in by corporations because they will take the jobs, and work cheaper than the Americans.
Oh, for sure. And another kind of disturbing thing, probably going viral now on the web, this YouTube of in Dearborn, Michigan, where this Christian type group, for some reason, they I guess they did it last year and maybe years past. There's a sort of a carnival deal in Dearborn, Michigan, and I guess every year they have it, and they were there doing their thing. I don't know exactly what they were trying to do, but boy, I'll tell you, the mobs of these Arabs and true Arabs throwing bottles, full, not full, but empty milk cartons, you know, the big plastic ones, and stuff like that. Adam, the guys were coming out, they were coming out with blood, and the cops wouldn't do a thing. The cops wouldn't do a thing to against the crowd, the mob, and then they finally closed down these guys, which actually had a permit. But this is in Dearborn, Michigan. Now, let me give you some history about Dearborn, Michigan. Dearborn, Michigan, in the 1950s, was headed by a guy by the, excuse me, not gay, but a guy by the name of Orville Hubbard. He was the mayor, and he held fast against the blacks coming in any place to Dearborn, or going to a place outside of the city area called Camp Dearborn. And that was a big, that was, oh, such a horrible thing. You know, you'd see people talking about it, and oh boy, these guys are racist or whatever, you know. Well, He was right. And he tried to keep Dearborn white, but eventually he lost the fight. He lost the mayor's office, and then it sort of slogged along until the mid-60s when there was the civil rights and that kind of thing, and then it was over. Essentially, the game was over. I think it would have been over either way, even if Kennedy had lived, because Kennedy was going along with that stuff too. But once Kennedy was knocked off by the Jews, and I'm pretty sure that was the case, Piper makes a darn good case for that.
Oh, absolutely.
And, I think so. And so anyway, once that happened, and the follow-up Warren Commission whitewash, those two things together, that was the end of America as far as I can see it. And from that point on, that's when it really started going downhill. And then you've got the part Jew LBJ in there. Pretty sure he's part Jew. Not 100%, but my Heeb meter says he's up around 85-90%. So
you have a Heeb meter?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's sort of a subjective thing, but you know. By the way, I listened to your show today with B. Billy Mars.
Mars,
I think,
yeah.
Mars, yeah. My Heeb meter's up around 60-65% with him, but I couldn't find anything. I did mail you something that I did find, which was kind of strange. But,
yes, I read that. Now, he does believe in the Holocaust, because one other time I had him on and he started talking about the Holocaust, I said, wait. We have different opinions about that, so let's steer clear of that. Hmm. But, yeah, he was just trying to make a case for this archbishop being Jack the Ripper. And when you look at the details, and it was, of course, all circumstantial, but when you look at the details with throat slicing, cutting the throat and everything, I mean, that's just a ritual. That's a Jewish ritual.
That's blood ritual. That's Ariel Toaff, I think is his name, T-O-A-F-F, in Israel.
Yeah.
Wrote the book recently about that within the last few years. And but the thing that got me about him is his mannerisms. Yeah, I got to give them about 25%. Very, very Jewish like. But beyond that, when he was repulsed almost when you brought up rabbis, you know, you see the redirect, almost immediate redirect.
Uh huh.
And that's what they do. I remember one time I was on RBN, you know, as a call-in, on a guy's show called J.H. Abrahamson or something like that. This was 6 or 7 years ago. And I wouldn't let go of the World Trade Center 7. You know, see, I always say, you know, you can leave all the rest for the court cases. If you ever get an indictment, you can leave all the rest, World 1 and 2 and the rest of it around there for the court cases. But the one that's an incredibly obvious casino-type controlled demolition that they can't explain away is World Trade Center 7. So you stick with that, you hammer that. Well, I did this with this guy, and he kept on redirecting. And he was even redirecting into real stuff. Real stuff about World Trade One, World Trade Two. I mean, it wasn't like it was that contentious. I mean, this was the standard fare of that time. But he wanted to get me away from World Trade Center 7. They'll even tell the truth someplace else to keep you away from the real gut issue, the one that's going to turn their hide. And I see this a lot. And that's what I smelled on this guy today when he immediately redirected away when you brought up the rabbis, who are the worst molesters going, the worst pedophiles. And it's in their religion. It's in their Talmud. You know, it's a disgusting thing. And he doesn't even take it into account. Yeah, like I say, maybe I got to put him up around 85% on the Heeb meter now that I think about it.
Well, what I do when somebody's on the program, I mean, there are several ways of getting to truth. I'm never brutal with anybody, verbally brutal, because I just don't think that it would speak well of me. But you can get people to say things that demonstrate to the listeners exactly what their status is, where they stand on certain things, and so people can draw their own conclusions. And some of my listeners emailed me afterwards and said, you know, just after listening to your program today, I really think that it was a rabbi that did those killings. So people learn even from programs where somebody is trying to impose one dogma. They can just kind of figure things out and say, ah, boy, this doesn't sound right. And, you know, there's several ways of getting to the truth.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And there is a male way and a female way of doing things. Sort of. I mean, I hate to put it that way, but I think it's true. You know, it's there are different ways to handle things, and both are necessary, I believe.
Sure.
Yep.
Sure.
I've got something else here too. You know, going back to Deruti, and I'll send you these links if you want to put them up. Fine. If not, that's okay. But do you recall a group called the Luddites? These were the anti-technology people in the middle of the Industrial Revolution in England. Does that ring a bell?
No.
Okay. Well, the Luddites, they're named after a fellow by the name of Ned Ludd. LUD, and the Luddites are LUDDITES. And the Luddites are anti-technology people. And what they really did, the big thing in the Industrial Revolution in England were textiles. Really, and related apparel. That was the big heart and soul of the Industrial Revolution then, and everything else sort of circled around it. For transportation, you needed locomotives and things like that. But so what he did, they had a lot of homespun back then, and people would make money that way. And these mills would essentially put them out of business. So all this homespun, these little cliques, these little groups of probably of ladies and maybe guys once in a while sewing, putting things together, well, they were all put out of business by these highly efficient textile mills. So what Ned Ludd would do, and he would go around and go into the factories and break up the machines. Literally destroy the machines.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. And so in time, many others did this, and they were called Luddites. And every time one of these events would occur, one of these breakups, whoever did it, they would say, well, King Ludd has been here. King Ludd.
Well,
so here's a little.
They see it as competition.
Well, that's it. You know, they... If there's no upward mobility in education and things like that, then what have they got? You know, they're simple slaves. So here's one little ditty that was written about him, a little five-line poem. As the Liberty lads o'er the sea bought their freedom and cheaply with blood, so we, boys, we will die fighting or live free, and down with all kings but King Ludd. Now that was just the opening verse, I believe. I haven't seen the rest, but they said it was an opening verse by Lord Byron. Very interesting. And Lord Byron was very good friends with Percy Bysshe Shelley and his wife, Mary Shelley, who wrote Frankenstein.
Right.
Yeah. So real interesting stuff there. But this Industrial Revolution is, again, on this same website where I got the Deruti stuff from. It's called recollectionbooks.com with a bunch of slashes and go here, go there. But it has a whole page just documenting things related to the Luddites. But what it really is, this whole page, is almost a chronology of the Industrial Revolution, because they're putting in all the things related, but are just facts related, but they have nothing to do with the Luddites. They happen to talk about, finally, in one of the places, for example, they talk about James Watt. James Watt's steam engine comes in, you know? I mean, so stuff like that. So it's a beautiful page showing the entire early to mid-industrial revolution in England. So I'll send that along to you, and, you know, you can take a look at it.
That'd be great.
Yeah. So let's see, what else have I got here? No, I wrote one here. I don't think I'll go into that. Let's see. Oh, that's kind of cool. I love this one by Muhammad Ali. I ain't got no quarrel with them Kong. He was good. I really liked Muhammad Ali, especially when he came out for the sanctity of race. And that one video of his is still on YouTube. In fact, it's on a little site that I've got, but you can find it any place where he defends the people maintaining their racial viability instead of race mixing, which is really a problem. Maybe in other times, Deanna, race mixing wouldn't be, it would be more an anomaly. It would be something that really is based on, quote, love, end quote, and not something promoted psychologically through the education system and things like that. But at this point in time, it's actually racial treason, although people aren't smart enough to realize it, so how can you say it's treason? But at this point in time, considering the fact that the white race now is at maybe 8% of the world's population, whereas around the year 1900, we were approaching one-third of the world's population. At this point in time, race mixing is at least effectively racial treason.
And, absolutely. It's homogenization of the races, and the one race that doesn't want to participate in that kind of activity are the Jews. And they certainly are not letting all of these illegal immigrants into their country. In fact, I think they're building camps for the ones that are there that aren't leaving.
Yeah, they're trying to get rid of, I guess, the Falashian blacks that they brought in a long time ago. And I guess there are some other workers that came in. They probably, some of the Jews, you know, they have the two big factions. So some of the Jews probably brought in these blacks to be house workers to undercut the Palestinians' cheap wages. And so now they're trying to get rid of those, too. It's a real, it's a mess. It's like Tom Metzger says, put a wall around Israel, let all the Jews go there. 10 years later, you got none. But it's just a real can of worms with those people. And the problem is that we're paying for the worms, and we have been for an awful long time in this country. And we're also, our military is almost totally dominated at the top by these people. And also they're bringing in a lot of the non-white races into the fighting ranks. So it's a lot of problems.
And certainly they're behind all the multiculturalism in every country.
Yep, that's exactly the problem with the right wing in Europe now. The right wing is making huge mistakes by making alliances with the Jews. And one real good example is the English Defense League. They even fly the flag along with the English flag, the claw. They fly the claw along with the English flag. And the claw, you know, that's the flag of Israel, the Star of David and the two rivers. And so it's crazy stuff like that. I think the BNP has some Jewish influence now. I think the German right-wing party has some Jewish influence now. And the problem is they want to get the non-whites out of their countries, but they got to remember who brought them in, who opened the door. And too often that's lost. So it's a real can of worms we're into right now. I look at history and sometimes I get a little depressed and I just don't know what to do. You know, we just have to keep on keeping on and get the information out. Continue, pound the information out and open you right wingers, you right wing folks. You have to open yourself to this left winger, these left wingers who are non-Jewish. They might not be anti-Jewish left wingers right now, but they are non-Jewish left wingers. They're just working class people who see the wrongs being done, and right now they're under sway of the media, and it's so hard to break them loose from that. But there are a lot of good people out there, good left tendency people, and you got to open your hearts and doors to those people and listen and not go into the race question immediately. Later on, they can come out, but there's so many things that we have in common that we can get to without going into the details right now. You know, we have to be a little bit like Goebbels, I'm sure, did up in Berlin in the mid-1920s. And so that's just a suggestion for the right. And I see so often they lurch back when they see a left winger or something like that. But I think the guys that are trying to make inroads with that are the national anarchists, like Yeoman, I think is his name, out Bay Area national anarchists, those kind of guys. But excuse me, they are a small faction. You know, they're a pretty small grouping right now, but they're trying to make breakthroughs like that. So this is what we need.
Certainly. Well, I think we should unify with anybody that can see who the real enemy is, and they are the real enemy of every group.
They're the enemy of all races, all groups, even some of their own. You know, they will sacrifice their own in a blink.
Sure.
You know, if they've done it before, they'll do it again. And but the thing is, from our perspective, being advocates of the white working class, the problem is we're on the brink, although a lot of people say, it ain't going to happen. But considering we went from 33% of the Earth's population to one quarter of that in a mere 100 years, a little over 100 years, I mean, that's bad. And the worst part of it is it's getting a lot worse. And So we have to always remember the racial angle, but not from a supremacist, not from a Jewish type of point of view,
right,
but more from a survival point of view. And we have to be open to making alliances with these others. Like I know Tom Metzger tries to make alliances with these racial blacks who want to break free. And at one time, he even gave a speech at the New Black Panthers, and they gave a standing ovation.
Good for him.
Oh, yeah. But they get caught up in it. And there's a lot of this. It's tough to break the media stranglehold.
Oh, and a lot of distrust there. I mean, look, if you look at history, I mean, you can understand why they would distrust whites.
Oh, yeah, whites in general. And that's what's pushed. You know, it's there's a fella on he was on the old AIR, whatever it was, AIR America, I guess they called it, the progressive radio station. Now he's got his own show. It's called Mike Malloy. And he's very interesting. You listen to him when he talks about corporations and things like that, and he's spot on. I mean, he's right on target. But then he gets into the race questions, and he hates white people. You know, I mean, he just, everything he says, oh, white people do it. Well, that broad brush is horrible.
Right.
But you have to always break it down and say it's the white elites, it's the lapdogs of the Jews. Yeah, other white working class types go along with it a lot of times to get along. But really, the truth is that the elites are the true traitors, not just to the white race, but to the human race in general. And
right.
If we're going to defeat these Jews, we're going to have to do it from a combined effort. To me, that's the only way. And so.
Well, it was the elites who created the marriage laws and that separated the blacks and the whites to begin with in early America and France and other places, because whites and blacks used to work together. They, you know, they were very social with each other, and then the government came along with all of these laws and created division because they didn't want these two groups of people to look and see who was really the enemy. And so they figured, okay, we'll just, it's back to the divide and conquer thing again.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know that much of that history. To me, it sounds like not that bad a thing. Separation, we believe in separation. It's like you say, don't hate, separate.
Right, right.
And that's a normal thing, too. That's what I mentioned Muhammad Ali before in that video. He says, look, the geese fly with the geese, the hawks
exactly.
with the
yeah.
hawks.
Yeah.
You know, and it can't, in a natural way, it can't be any other way.
Right.
But the thing is, whatever tool these Jews and other manipulators, but basically the Jews are the top of the manipulator list, whatever they can use to divide and conquer, they will use it. And
right.
we have to get over some of these things, combine our forces, and just not be shooting at each other like we have been for a couple, 3,000 years, I guess.
Right.
And I think that's the bottom line. I don't think it's going to happen overnight. When I look at things like this, if you put it in history, in the perspective of history, you're talking 200 years minimum. And hopefully, although I kind of don't know, but hopefully the 100 years, the first one started around the turn of the 19th century after the Blackwell Conference in 97, I think it was, 1897. But so maybe half of it's over, but I don't know. It might be starting right now. But this is a multi-generational thing.
And, oh, absolutely.
And that's why getting the information out, maybe the internet will make that much difference, because we're getting the information out and people are reading it. You know, I'm absolutely stunned sometimes when I see the comments on some of these YouTube videos that that the Google people in Herzliya, you know, I saw a room full of their operators, and they must have had 100 people, operators in there who specifically are to target this stuff, and they can't get on there fast enough. You know, they can't shut these sites down fast enough. In fact, now I think they've given up. I think now what they're probably doing is tracking people, using them as honeypots, rather than closing down most of the sites. They're leaving most of them open, and the videos and the people that do the videos. But I still say we have to get the information out, and make sure you download it, and make sure you keep it in multiple places if you can. Maybe keep a memory stick over here and your hard drive over there, and you know, keep one in somebody else's place who's, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, you got got to kind of think sneaky, because I don't know how bad it's going to get, Deanna. I don't think we've seen anything yet.
Well, I don't think so either.
We have 30,000 drones, they say, and for domestic use and things like that. I just don't know where this is going to end up, although I have suspicions. And I look at trends. I do charting, and I look at trends. And the trend says it's going to be a sideways Chinese water torture type of a thing. But I think the way that we can offset it is to get the information out, make them paranoid. And I think the more paranoia that goes into the Jews, they're going to overreact in certain situations, and they're going to actually cause their own downfall. And I think they're sort of heading that way now, but they're going to take a lot of us along with it. And so anyway, that's a few of the things that I've had on my mind, and, you know.
Well, I've certainly enjoyed you sharing those things that you've had on your mind. Very interesting, and I certainly concur with all of your conclusions. And I'm glad that you're still working on those Liberty Bells. Those are really fabulous magazines. And they can get those by going to resist.com. And if you just click on Expanded, up in the bar, just click Expanded, and just click on Liberty Bell.
Right. And Inspiration is there, too, although you can get that from Jamie Kelso's site, too. And also, you'll see John Kaminsky is there, too. So we're sort of, what do they call it, mirroring some of John Kaminsky's things.
Good. I like him.
So that's there. Yeah, John's a good, honest guy. And I don't agree 100% with what he says, but I don't agree with 100% with I don't think anybody.
Of course not.
You know, it's just the way it goes. So you have to keep honest with yourself and stick up for what you believe until it's turned over. And then go along with the flow. You know, I mean, with your own flow, if you happen to see something that you are wrong about, admit it and do your best again and turn it around. You know, the guy who's done that more than anybody I've ever seen is Tom Metzger. He started off as a Goldwater Republican in the 60s.
Oh, gosh, really?
Yep. And then he went to the John Birch Society.
Oh, my word.
And then
I did that, too, so I can't say.
But after a while, you could see that they were keeping you away from the Jewish.
Yeah, within a month or two, you figure, now, how come we got to say the Pledge of Allegiance, and how come we have to say a prayer, and how come we can't say the J word? I'm out of here.
Yep, that's it. And then, you know, talking about Tom, just give a little background, because he, you know, that is his website. That is really his website.
Right.
And then he went into, I guess he became a full-blown Catholic, and then he became a CI, Christian Identity. And then he became a Grand Wizard of California. At the time, he was working with David Duke. That was the 70s. Mm-hmm. And then he won that Democratic nomination in Orange County. And then they wouldn't let him in the Democratic meetings. They used state troopers to keep him out. And then I guess after that is when he became what he calls a complete atheist. I mean, he looks at all religion as being mythology, which has no... maybe no basis, but beyond that has no use, ultimate use. It's used too often to manipulate.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a slight disagreement with him on that when I look at these Eastern Orthodox types. And I mean the types like Kapner and also Matthew Raphael Johnson.
Uh-huh.
And these people are not pro-Jewish at all, and they're not going to be manipulated.
Right.
They know what's going on. These are the kind of allies that we need to, you know, for the time being, let's just use some blinders and keep our eye on the real problem, which is the Jew.
Right.
And particularly the elites. And I think that's the important thing.
Exactly. Well, it's been wonderful chatting with you, and we need to do this again. And again, that website is resist.com, and that belongs to Tom Metzger, Metzger, and he has a radio program. Okay.
Well, okay. Thank you very much for having me on your special show, Deanna. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Okay.
Take care.
You too.
All righty. Bye-bye.
I know.